B-Pod Studios.
It's an app.
Fred, hello.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
What's going on? Are we on fire?
Tomatoes.
Mike Francesa appears to rip fought while ripping Adam Gase.
I love meatballs.
Do you?
Let's go Red Sox.
Hit me like a bomb, bomb,
bomb. Go Red Sox.
Hit me like a bomb, bomb, bomb.
Wall dick, well, yeah.
She made out with my dad.
Hello. Welcome to the show.
Forgive me.
But you caught me on the counter, wasn't me. Saw me banging on the sofa, wasn't me. Even had her in the shower, wasn't me. She even caught me on camera, wasn't me. Honey came in, caught me. Creeping with the girl next door. Picture this, we were both butt naked, banging on the bathroom floor. I had to try to keep her from what she was about to see. Why should she believe when I told her it wasn't me? Legalize it. Whoa, amber is the color of your energy. Whoa, amber is the color of your energy. 311 is not good band. Thanks.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning. We are Toucher and Rich. 617-779-0985. You can watch us on Twitch at twitch.tv or get the Twitch app. Watching highlights of the Michigan State Kentucky. First of all, who's the a-hole who's the celebrity Kentucky fan?
I don't know. I haven't seen...
Because he's running around like he owns the place. There's a kid from Kentucky taking half-court shots and making them. He must be that freshman kid. Oh, boy. He's a good 10 feet behind the three-point line taking shots.
Yeah, this is that time of year where I basically have no idea who these guys are. And I have to, because, I mean, it's so young now. I mean, you've got freshmen you have to learn about.
What do you know about college basketball?
Nothing right now. every year I have to take a look at the beginning of the season and go, okay, who are the next NBA stars going to be?
The guy you're talking about, I guess, is Tyrese Maxey, who had 26.
But he's not the kid for them.
No, he came off the bench, actually.
Yeah, he's not the kid for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was taken 10 feet behind the three-point line.
So funny how, like, you know, it used to be guys would be in there for 3 to 4 years and you would get to know them.
No,
and you'd,
no.
And now it's like, who are these people?
No,
every
well,
single
that's
guy
not a freshman.
Of the season.
But is he a freshman?
Maxey is a freshman.
He is a freshman. Well, yeah. You got Cassius Winston.
Yeah. 26 points, they're saying last night?
Yeah, Maxey at 26.
Yeah. All right. You know, we do this show here, and there's a show in the... that's syndicated called The Bert Show. And the Bert is a thorough piece of crap. Just a awful person. And he is about a 4'11". And he did a contest one time where if he lost, he was forced to take photos with his shirt off. And lo and behold... he went on some, like, diet where he was allowed, like, 2 grapes a day. He just was an awful, awful person. And
he got jacked, too.
Well, no, that's the thing, is he got jacked, so he would, quote-unquote, throw me in the briar patch. He got waxed, and then there were these billboards, and he's like, oh, poor me. And he's, like, holding a surfboard, and he's, like, in really good shape. He's obviously covering up for being a dwarf. So I'm just looking at this now. We get this email from like radio thing. They did Live Like a Pregnant Woman Week, in honor of some broad on the show. They were put through a rigorous series of activities for 5 days that any expecting mother would go through. Can you imagine this is your job? I don't care how much you're making. At least Maddie gets to act like a man. They were put through a rigorous series of activities for 5 days that any expecting mother would go through. Fellow cast members strategically coordinated these tasks and challenges for each day in an effort to help the men of the show empathize with every stage of pregnancy.
What were the tasks?
Well, I'll tell you now. Mm-hmm. Bert and Mo experienced a full week of living a day in the life of a pregnant woman, including the dietary restrictions, which I'm sure Bert was very upset about. And each day bringing challenges that come with every trimester of pregnancy. The pair started the week performing a test that simulated the first trimester of pregnancy. Symptoms including tender nipples, swollen boobs, and morning sickness.
Now, how do you, like, how do you replicate swollen or tender nipples for a guy? Like, what did they do? Did they just have, like,
clothespins,
like thump them or whatever for like, you know, 30 minutes?
Yeah, they just, well, it's right. They just put electrodes on their nipples.
So. I mean,
throw Bert in the briar patch. I have no idea. I would assume they didn't do anything. Morning sickness, they had to take Epicac or whatever it is. The guys also experienced symptoms such as swollen feet and weight gain by wearing ankle weights and clothes that were too tight.
I just don't understand how that converts to good radio. But then again, we're a show that had a live LARP on the air.
That went really well.
It was awesome.
I had fun.
Did you have a wizard name? I forget.
I don't know.
I know that we had Durango Dong in the other room.
I just beat the snot out of two guys
in
costumes.
And then Nick of the world that does not try at all. Nick just showed up as Nick.
Nick of the struggling hot. And struggled through having to use the bathroom every 30 minutes. Again, I don't know. I guess you went to the bathroom every 30 minutes, which seems like my life now. Wearing tight compression stockings in a pregnancy empathy belly for an entire day. Even while working out and sleeping. Well, don't work out. Don't know what this is. And naturally, the experience wouldn't be complete with the grand finale. Bert and Moe's festive water breaking. And being hooked up to a contraption that simulated labor pains for the duration of the show. I wish I was running that. I'd smack that bastard in the nuts over and over and over again.
I'm not joking. Was this an episode of Degrassi? I think it was, where they had to, like, wear, like, the big stomach and, like, you know, because they were trying to prevent teenage pregnancy and, like, this is what it could be like. And they had even the men do it, too, so you knew what they were going through. I honestly think this is straight from, like, a Degrassi episode. I know it's not Saved by the Bell because you guys would have known, but it's some show like that. It's not Saved by the Bell.
I wouldn't. Saved by the Bell might have done a lighter version of that.
Okay. Speaking of that, Jenny Garth and Tori Spelling are doing a show.
Yeah, we have Tori Spelling coming on.
Awesome. Awesome.
When?
Fantastic.
Not like in advance of the show yet. They are the people behind the reboot of 90210.
An abject disaster.
We talked about this, Rich. We've talked about this off the air. It will be a tour de force of Wallach just acting like Tori Spelling is still the character on 90210.
I want Wallach, because Wallach is one of these guys that's watched these episodes so much that he can find, like, flaws in the timelines. And he can question, like, hang on.
Yeah.
David Silver hadn't had his recording contract yet, but Babyface was in episode 47. And how did that happen? I mean, you will be able to. I need you to question them.
All right.
Like I'm talking the dudes who play, like, in Star Trek. In Star Trek Adventures, the guys are like, pardon me, but the button that you pressed in episode 473 is not the same button.
Well,
I need you to just, devils in details, question them on all the inconsistencies and
You can also bring in when she was on Saved by the Bell. I did an interview with David Silver, whatever his real name is.
David Austin Green.
David Austin Green.
Yeah.
And where I just treated him like he was the character from 90210, and he actually had great sport with it.
You have to do that.
And he was cool. I tried it with Dave Coulier. Not good. I did not like it.
I'm thinking Tori Spelling's a no-go on that, too.
Oh, Tori's going to be fine.
You think she's
going to
be fine with that?
Yeah. Her and Jenny Garth are going to be fine.
I said no Jenny Garth.
It's just Tori Spelling? That's fine.
Because they're on the phone.
Completely fine.
Yeah, I said no Jenny Garth.
Okay.
That might just get sad. But Tori Spelling, if I'm Tori Spelling, I don't want to talk about my personal life.
That's a great point. She's probably going to be relieved. You're right about that. I completely forgot about how things have kind of gone a little nutty.
Yeah, she was. She had a reality show that, you know, even though a lot of it probably was contrived, You can't fake the sadness. And it was just sad.
I can't think of a worse idea that you finally got most of the cast back together. And instead of it being a continuation of the characters on 90210, didn't they do like this kind of meta thing where they play themselves, the actors?
Yes. Being duped into going back and doing a reboot.
What
yes.
an awful idea.
And Emily Valentine, of all people, was their boss.
But I will tell you this, the cast probably would not have, or Jason Priestley and
Dylan, who died.
No. But I'm saying Priestley was on it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But in order to get them to do it, they might have had to have spun it into something that it was did not become that something that was ironic and funny.
Well, then they lost out on a lot of money because that could have been a huge success, and they could have had a second season. They could have gone on. I mean, look at these shows like Will and Grace, who had a second life. I mean, you even look at the Gilmore Girls. I keep going back to because the insane amount of money that they made. And 90210 was 10 times the show that the Gilmore Girls was. I mean, that was a massive, massive show at its time.
Oh, yeah. No, at its time. I mean, it still resonates today.
So I don't – they blew a golden opportunity. They were able to get all these people back. And, I mean, not that it was probably tough with a lot of the people and their schedules. But still, that is kind of an amazing thing that you had everyone agree to it. And then you blew it with the premise. I don't know why you would do that.
I know you don't get Ian Ziering just to come into a reboot. I mean, he's got things to do. Now, what as an exercise.
Yes.
When Brandon in the early non-successful years, if this was today, 90210 probably would have only been on for a season.
That's probably true, yeah.
It was before it was the creators realized that they had to step things up.
Mm-hmm.
Get a little soap opera aspect.
Are you going to tell me when Vivica A. Fox moved in next door?
I don't remember that.
That was an early episode.
Because there was a lot of racial stuff. Like when Brandon went and met with the African-American school or the black school.
Yeah, Shaw High School. Yeah.
Okay. was the song that he sang with the black kid that was...
That was David Silver who sung the song with the black kid. They did a song called Switch It Up, and they were rapping at the Peach Pit. And that was, you know, the whole thing about squash it at the end. That was a non-violence type of thing.
No, wasn't that at the black school?
No, you're confused.
Was the black guy wearing a dashiki?
Yes.
Okay.
What was the character's name? Do you know?
Oh, the black guy from Shaw. He went to Yale. I remember he went to Yale and he had this little thing with Andrea that didn't work out because Andrea was going to go to Yale and those two lovely kids never did get together. But I don't remember his name off the top of my head.
But I remember he did.
The editor of the Shaw newspaper. Yes. Brandon was the editor of the West Beverly newspaper, and they wrote like opinion articles that were posted side by side in both newspapers. And Brandon invited the entire Shaw community over to West Beverly High School for like the homecoming dance, and all the Beverly. Jeez, said, no, we don't want that. What are you doing inviting all those African Americans to our high school?
But in fairness, John. And the black students of Shaw High School were not wild about going over to West Beverly.
Right. That's true.
You know what I say, man? The stage is yours. What the hell is that? Squash it, man.
Yep.
We out.
Yep. Yeah, it was a band. It was a band that Valerie Malone originally promised that could play at the Peach Pit after dark, although she had no interest in doing it. And the name of the band was Bloody Rue. And were they upset. They were really upset.
So Bloody Rue was supposed to play.
Yes. And they did
like
not.
A white power band.
They walked in and saw David Silver and this guy rapping, and they got really upset.
Who wouldn't? I mean, yeah. The Peach Pit was whites only for so long. All right. Both your local teams played last evening. We'll talk all about that in a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
It's hub.
This is where Boston talks sports. Toucher and Rich, Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Recapping what you missed is Toucher and Rich.
What happened last night?
98.5 The Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. And Rich, all kinds of teams playing last night. What was the deal?
Well, Gordon Hayward isn't just back. He's the best he's ever been.
Hayward dribbles to 12 feet, knocks down another one. And this is getting real now. He is 9 for 9 in the first half. 22 for Gordon Hayward. 59-52, Celtics by 7.
During last night's win against the Cavaliers, not only did Gordon Hayward have his best game as a Celtic, he had his best game ever as the Seas beat the Cavs 119-113. He had he tied a career high of 39 points, made 17 field goals, a career high, 8 assists, a career high, 7 rebounds, and caused 2 turnovers, and also sealed the game in the final seconds.
Kemba moving to his right, pull up 3 in the air, front iron no good, rebound, Gordon Hayward, and the putback, and what better way for this one to finish than a career high 39 for Gordon Hayward on a putback. Kemba steal in the backcourt, and Colin Sexton has to give the foul. Ooh. The Cavs were back on their heels after giving up the kind of rebound they have gotten all night. Threw away the inbound. Kemba saw it coming, stole the inbounding pass, and he can put this thing away at the free throw line with 21 seconds to go.
But one of the most astounding things about Gordon's game last night was that he became the first player since the inception of the three-point line to shoot 16 for 16 from inside the arc. And the first player since Wilt Chamberlain in 1967 to shoot 16 for 16 on two-pointers, according to Elias. So, yes, John Wallach, he is as good as Wilt Chamberlain. On top of that,
he did it a lot of different ways, too. I mean, there were mid-range jumpers. They were you know, fallaways. There were drives to the basket where he just went by people. I mean, he did it all sorts of different ways. And in today's day and age where if you score 39, usually you make 6 or 7 threes, this is something completely different.
I mean, the game is right now, the way Brad Stevens has things drawn up, it's perfect for him. And he even said that afterwards. Like, there's things that Brad's doing this year with him because now there's space to do it. You don't have a Kyrie Irving-type player in there. And it seems like the way that everything's lined up, it's perfect for his putback jumpers. It's, I mean, this is what he's good at. Inside the three-point line, as you saw last night, 16 for 16. And he is in a zone, as the team is as well. And Kemba Walker was his typical excellent self as well.
Kemba Walker, catch and shoot, quick three, swish. Marcus Smart and Kemba Walker have a little something going now.
Well, he gets into that small window, that small little elevator, and nobody else can get in to guard him.
18 for Kemba, 4 more threes, 75-63. Celtics by 12.
Kemba Walker scores 25 like he's breathing. Jason Tatum with 18, but it's nice to finally see this guy getting hot.
Edwards dribbling low. Man on fire there as he goes to three different Cavs before circling out of the wing. Then pulls up, shoots a deep three, and he drills it.
It's opening up.
Carson Edwards loves this building, dreads or no dreads.
Ooh, the dam is burst.
He's putting dread in the heart of the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Watching it burst.
9:01 to go. That's what I do. Boston 102, Cleveland 90.
See, the dam's starting to burst.
Yeah,
Carson Edwards.
Yeah, he looks. It sounds like he is. He's talking about watching a pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
He's. I see an opening. The dam's starting to burst.
It's very.
It sounds like there's crowning going on right now.
It must be. You should have said that. You should have said, "Keep your eyes up, kid. There's some crowning going on." Well, Carson Edwards.
Pretty soon, that uterus is just going to.
Here comes the deflated soccer ball.
Or whatever the hell it is that falls out.
Well, Carson Edwards, who I didn't even recognize when he was on the court because he had shaved his dreads, after having the jitters the first few games, looked comfortable, scoring a quick 13 off the bench. And here's Brad Stevens on Hayward's big night, because that truly was the story.
Yeah, he was aggressive going to the basket. He did a good job when they were guarding him with big guys. He did a good job when they were guarding him with small guys. He just kept making the right play over and over. And when they did, you know, eventually start trapping him, you know, he hit Rob for a couple of those dunks, Tice a couple times, so he played really well.
And Carson Edwards is every bit a rookie, and you can see it in his play, and most definitely you can see it and how he sounds when speaking to the media after games.
How much does the pace those guys set sort of help you when you come in and the ball is just sort of popping?
You mean like, what?
Well, Gordon and so forth. Yeah. The pace they set, so when you come on the floor, just how much does that?
I guess it's good. I mean, I don't know. I just be coming in, just playing as hard as I can, and just try to do the right thing for my team.
It's not the hair?
No, it's not. I did feel lighter, though. But no, it hadn't. I don't know.
When you say lighter, is that, like, in your speed or in your vertical?
Just, like,
neither. Like, this, you can just feel it on my head, and, like, it's not there, so... I don't know.
Go Purdue.
I don't know.
Leave me alone. Leave me alone, damn it. I want to go
Purdue
take a shower.
Purdue education is really helping out there.
I didn't know there were going to be questions. In fairness, you know, I like the fact that he's not good at BSing. Because, I mean, the questions were pretty dumb that were being thrown at him anyway.
And he got frustrated real fast.
And he got, well, not
I don't know. He was flustered. He not frustrated.
It's like that he just doesn't know how to answer. The first question was way convoluted. I still don't even know what he was trying to say. And the second one about the dreads, like, he doesn't know how to just kind of give anybody anything yet or be witty. I think he's still got the jitters of being a rookie, and he's got the mics in front of him, and I don't know.
He played in the Big Ten for 4 years. I would imagine that, you know, you get some questions.
I'm thinking the preseason when he went off in Cleveland, there were some microphones around him, too. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's no excuse. By the way, Grant Williams, again, continuing to be fantastic for the Celtics.
He has been good.
No, he hasn't.
Grant Williams has been good this season.
No, he hasn't.
What? When they've put him in, he's done a good job.
He's averaging under 4 points, under 3 rebounds.
Look at the minutes, though, he's been playing. He hasn't been playing a ton of minutes. When he's been in there, he's been serviceable.
Which is serviceable.
He's a rookie.
Yeah, there's a bunch of – Grant Williams is not going to be a good pro at all.
Well, I mean, I don't know if he's going to be a good pro or not, but I do know that you can't say he's been bad. When he's been put in, and it hasn't been much, he's done a pretty good job.
Not really.
I mean, I think another
part
of it.
Have you seen him play yet?
Yes, I saw him play last night. I've seen him play. Yes, he hasn't been good.
How many minutes was he playing last night?
Last night he played
13, 12, something
11.
Like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, no, Grant Williams is not a good player.
He's also, and I don't think this was the plan going in, but because of injuries, he's kind of been pushed into that. He's been the backup center. At 6'5".
Yeah, I mean, that's not really where he should
be
playing.
I don't think that's what the Celtics had in mind when they started the season.
Well, no, but I mean, you know, well, you keep an eye on him.
Okay, I will. I'll keep an eye on him.
I've been surprised because I didn't have any expectations for him, and I know I should because of how high they picked him, but I just...
Well, I mean, look, was he a top 10 pick? Was he a lottery pick? No.
No, but still.
But Gorman, who's going to be on tomorrow, by the way, is...
Loves him.
Yep. But Gorman is often wrong about these young kids. He falls in love with them.
You know who has been pretty good, and I'm fairly surprised?
Hayward gets a screen from Robert Williams, floats it to Williams, coming strong down the middle. Violent two-hand slam Robert Williams with 3.5 to go in the quarter.
That's what he does.
I know.
That's all he does.
Yep.
On offense, it's a good thing he got a lob because he can't create his own shot.
I mean,
he is severely limited at the offensive end.
He is.
He is. His range is 2 or 3 feet and in. And give the Celtics credit. They're finding ways to get him to roll to the basket and get him the dunks that he needs.
This is all
defensively
like coaching.
I mean, spectacular, offensively limited, very much so.
Without having like a true center down there, and with Enes Kanter being injured up to this point, they've done a pretty good job outside of the first game. No, even in the first game, like for having Joel Embiid, one of the best guys in the game, best big men in the game, they did okay kind of keeping him to like 22 points, I think, which for him is, that's a job well done if you've done that. But, I mean, it hasn't been glaring, put it that way.
They missed the size, though. They do. They missed the size a lot. Like, for instance, down the stretch, you had Marcus Smart on Kevin Love. Now, he did a pretty good job. He limited Love from going crazy. But, I mean, I don't think that's, again, what the Celtics want. I mean, Smart is a great defensive player, but he's guarding guys that are huge.
Yeah, I know Love had a bad first half, but he, if he wanted to post him up, he could. I mean, he started wanting the ball later in the game.
He did, but I mean, Smart held his own. I mean, he's one of the reasons they won.
That is hysterical watching him taking on the big man and frustrating the snot out of him. And you saw it again yesterday. You've seen it, well, since the beginning of the season. You saw him on Giannis, which I thought was one of my favorite matchups of the year and one that I didn't expect the Celtics to have any sort of success with, yet it somewhat worked.
I think ultimately, though, when Brad Stevens gets everyone healthy, if indeed that does happen, you will see less of that. I don't think that's one of those things that Stevens draws
this
up.
This is necessity, and it's worked.
This is what we want. We want smart guarding Giannis and smart guarding Kevin Love. I don't think that's what Brad Stevens wants.
All right. When we come back, we will talk about the Bruins and not a good game from their goaltender.
They get ripped off as well.
Yeah. All right. Here are the headlines.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is where Boston sports fans start their day.
Oh, now, focus.
With Toucher and Rich on Boston's home for sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Cliff! Cliff!
Still an excellent album.
I just tattooed a black armband on, so you just see Cliff.
Rest in peace. Who knew that 2 years later they'd make the best metal album of all time? About 2 years, two albums later.
Until Newstead came out and just said, screw you, I'm in Flotsam and Jetsam.
And the band just said, we're going to pull your part of this album all the way down so no one can hear it.
So we can just hear the magical drumming of Lars Ulrich.
That is the best. If you listen to Injustice for All, Jason Newstead's not on it. Like, they turned the bass down, and they still, and to this day, they get asked about it, like, dude, where is the bass on this album? And they're like, yeah, we didn't really like him at the time. We didn't like, we just turned him down. Like, they'll admit that they completely cut him out of that album, and there's been calls for them to remix it and re-record it, and you're like, no, we're not going to do that.
Dire's Eve, I had to do mandatory Metallica, and every time that someone... I got to pick one song. I probably played Dire's Eve 80% of the time.
Oh, Dire's Eve, such a good song. Back to back, you went Master of Puppets into Injustice for All. That is, it still holds up. It's still heavy to this day. Well, the Bruins are once again victims of currently the worst thing in sports.
Right circle now, Coyle right of the net. Center's deflected, and Byron came back defensively. Coyle shoots, he scores! Sanderson, find him at the bottom of the left wing circle, send it out in front to Coyle, who slams one by Carey Price. First time tonight, Bruins lead it 5-4.
So the referee is over to talk to the Canadiens.
I think they're
bench.
Looking for offsides. Good. Because the pass came to Coyle, and he had to take it in his skates, and it was very close.
They think they have the go-ahead goal. Here is the call.
After review was determined, the play was offside. There is no...
It was a go-ahead
He's
goal
calling
in the
him
third.
Senerchin?
What's that?
What?
Did Sosi call him... What's going on?
Senerchin.
Oh, Senerchin.
Senerchin. Okay. It just got called up. Yeah. Okay.
That's not
no,
Sosi.
No, but that's not who he was talking about. He was talking about the guy from Montreal. I got confused.
Oh, all right. Yeah. That is not Sosi. Do you know his name?
Oh, Surratt.
Yes. And first name?
Judd.
Okay. I remember before you called.
Was he the guy that waylaid you when you were on your way to the bathroom?
Yeah, he just wouldn't shut up.
Yeah, okay,
I got you. And by the way, Raz played like complete garbage.
Yes,
last night.
He did not play well.
It was very frustrating. I didn't care if the team won or lost at some point at the end of the first period where he just was like...
Yep. Well, that was the go-ahead goal in the third that breathed new life into a Bruins team that was having the rare off night in their own net. But after a three-minute review, the Bruins were deemed offsides in a ridiculously hard-to-call frame-by-frame judgment using blurred lines. I would say Montreal typical, but having four different goals erased for the same reason this year, it was Bruins typical. And the Bruins end up losing 5-4 to the Canadiens. It was Tuukka's worst night of the year by far, allowing 5 goals on 31 shots. At least 2 of the goals were something you could deem as soft. Yet despite the loss, there's one guy who continues his total destruction world tour.
Here's Krug, high slot, feeds to the far circle. Fire, they score! He is sizzling hot. David Pastrnak in the far circle with a one-time blast. He blows it by Carey Price. A power play goal. Bruins 1, Canadiens 1.
15 goals in 15 games this season for David Pastrnak. The fastest a Bruins player has gotten to the 15-goal mark since John...
Cam Neely?
No. Peter McNabb.
Oh, wow. We go further back.
I knew that off the top of my head.
Goodness.
I've never heard that name before.
Peter McNabb, we're going early 80s on this. Wow. All right.
76, baby.
Oh, really? Jesus.
Yeah, Carey Price kept Montreal in that game. Carey Price was excellent. And then Rask.
Just awful.
Awful.
He had a bad night. He had a really bad night.
Really bad.
Those nights tend to happen more in Montreal for him than most places.
Yeah. Not lately, but you're right.
No.
There was
but
a streak there.
Look back over his career. Montreal tends to be the problem.
Yeah, I mean, there was times where you said, do you have a glove on?
Yeah. At least two of them I remember being embarrassing.
The final two goals in the first period were both embarrassing.
See, I think the final goal was embarrassing.
So maybe
we can go three.
Yeah. Yeah. None of them were good. I think we can all agree on that. Yeah. None of those three were good.
He said after the game, he said, it's one of those games where the hockey puck was a golf ball.
Yeah.
And I couldn't stop anything. But we do have a problem. And that problem is offsides replay. Here is Bruce Cassidy, who eloquently put everything in perspective last night.
Listen, my beef with that, some are going to go your way, some not. Ours are not going our way lately, but I assume that they will straighten out over the course of time. But the rule was put in place specifically for egregious. So they're over there for 3 minutes. You think, well, what is the purpose of this rule? You know, either you find something or you don't. 3 minutes. So now you're looking for something for it to be offside. So, you know it's going to go the other way, and it did.
Even Mike Milbury in the broadcast said, if it takes this long, just give up. And he's absolutely right.
And Milbury was predicting offsides on some goals and where it wasn't. But, yes, if it's going to be that long, it's ridiculous. Well, first of all, it should be a rule. But second of all, yeah.
No, I replay sucks. We all agree in this room. The question is, and I was listening to this in the car, Bob Beers is trying to explain that the reason it might be taking this long is they were trying to determine whether or not having the puck in your skates is possession or not.
No, it's good that they have that worked out because Lord knows that never happens in hockey.
Right. I know, and apparently the referees didn't have an answer for that, which is why it took so damn long.
Well, then there needs to be Stats McGee in Toronto. That's what they call, right? Toronto sitting there.
No, guy with glasses.
Yeah, guy with glasses.
In Toronto.
In Toronto.
Yes.
Who knows these answers immediately.
Yeah, well, that's
his job.
Considering that you are constantly using your skates to corral the puck in the game of hockey, that seems
but
like
does the puck have to be touching the skate for possession? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Oh, right.
Three minutes.
It took way too long. And look, the Bruins have two regulation losses. They should have won both of those games and had two goals taken away on replay in Denver, and they lost 4-2, and then they had that huge goal last night taken away on replay. Yeah,
they didn't deserve to win that game anyway. Bobby, go ahead.
Hey, guys, I just want to talk about that offsides call. In my opinion, it was offsides. If you look at it, that last frame, it shows.
But you just said the thing is frame.
The spirit of the rule, we complained about this with baseball, too, where it's such a bang-bang play. And if you have to slow it down to one frame to overturn it, that's insane.
I've always thought there should be a timer on review. Like, if you can't make a judgment within 60 seconds, then the call stands. Because then, and he's right, Cassidy's right, you're looking for something then at that point. And you're almost going to find a way to justify overturning it or trying to, change whatever call was made. So
I agree with Milbury on the time frame. Yeah, 60 seconds, it's got to be conclusive. I agree with all that. It shouldn't take that long. But the true story of that game last night was Rask's inability to stop two pucks that hit the bottom of his glove and a puck that goes five-hole that I think a five-year-old could have saved.
Yeah, he was playing as if he'd been buffed.
That's why I wasn't even pissed about the offsides thing. It's because Rask played like
that. Exactly, correct.
Yeah,
correct.
They didn't deserve to win that game.
Well,
and the other thing, last point real quick, is I actually like the game because maybe the Canadian-Boston rivalry will, maybe build back up because that's obviously historical. And it'd be good for this town and, it'd just be good for the hockey league.
Well, yeah. Julian is, I don't know.
I kind of like watching Claude fail. I got to be honest with you.
Well, all Claude will do is fail. His game, his style of coaching is completely antiquated.
Well, this doesn't do well for the rivalry because there was one unexpected moment of class from Canadians that happened when Zdeno Chara was honored for playing in his 1,500th game. That's ridiculous. The crowd actually applauded. Here is Char on what that meant.
Obviously, that felt really nice. I really appreciate that. It was very classy, and it's something that I will definitely remember.
The best thing is that people were showing pictures of him from, like, back in the day. He had long hair.
Yeah.
I did not realize that.
Did you see the video? I retweeted it. Ty Anderson found this video, and it is a thing that I don't even know when it was filmed. It must have been fairly recently. And it had a bunch of Canadians fans standing outside the arena, and these people from McDonald's were there. And they're like, what would you do for a Big Mac? And, you know, one guy's like, I'll do a crazy dance, all these Canadians fans. I'll do this. And they say, would you hug Zdeno Chara? And they all start going, oh, hell no, I would never charge him. I'd never hug him. And then from behind this wall, you see Zdeno Chara peek out, and it is.
I have too many. My teeth are too big for my gums. My teeth are very small. My gums are very large.
I mean, he comes walking.
It's scary to look at me.
It is fairly terrifying. And, of course, you know, a couple of them ended up hugging him and stuff like that. I just love that. What would you do for a Big Mac? Well, spend $3.
That's all right.
I would walk across the street and buy one for $3.
That's okay, we'll break. But my that's always been my thing with fast food. I've said it before. It's like there's like a price point issue. Now, Rich and I both had it when, you know, whatever, where it was 25 cent hamburgers and everyone was crazy. But as like an adult, like when they're like, oh, it's like 2-for-1 Whoppers, like, so you're eating 2 Whoppers just based on like the price point? Like,
I just love that. It's like that. What would you do for a Klondike bar? And people would be like, I'll swim in an ocean full of sharks. I'm like, how about you just go to 7-Eleven and get yourself like a 1 for $2?
Right, exactly. Like, oh, you can get 7 large fries for $5. Oh, well, then I'll have 7 large fries.
See, I was thinking about sawing off my arm. Instead of actually taking $1.58 out of my wallet and handing it to the guy at store 24.
Well, I also want the lukewarm Big Mac that they have right there. All right, so what's going on, Rich?
All right, well, it sounds like there was an expletive-laden explanation by the Chargers owner
this
about
is the
why
new
they're
thing
not
with rich
leaving.
Guys. This is the new thing with rich guys, is that they're like the common man. Because, you know, people find things differently offensive, like, you know, times change, and right now profanity is not considered offensive, and so like all these rich guys are like, like I'm swinging, like here we go. All right, we'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Get the app. Get the Sports Hub. Get Toucher and Rich. Down. Download the Sports Hub app today.
.985 the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. All right, Rich. What else is going on?
I think there's one guy who truly, I don't want to say regrets, but misses being a friend of Bill Belichick after. Well, if you want to say he stabbed him in the back, I would say it's a fair thing to say. Do you happen to know who that gentleman is by the words he's been saying on television? It sounds like he's kind of been defender of Belichick, so much so that it just seems like he's somebody who wants to be back in that friend zone.
Is it Lombardi? No, I'm going to guess. No, because Lombardi's had a career. I'm going to guess that it is a disgraced former assistant, someone who might have... tattletaled on the man.
Yes.
A man who finally showed he had a personality after he left the league. I'm going to say Eric Mangini.
Eric Mangini is correct. Yesterday he was on one of those, hey, speak up for yourself shows, and he is one of the lone people that was not impressed by the Ravens' win over the Patriots.
Look, I was impressed by Baltimore to some degree. I think if this is how you want to play football and you want to take your quarterback and turn him into a running back who also happens to pass every now and then that's great. You can't sustain it. There's a lot of good young running quarterbacks. There aren't very many good old ones. And when you consistently expose a player like that to hit after hit, it's the law of averages in the NFL, and it's going to catch up to you. If Baltimore can play football like this and control games, they're in good shape. If he has to come out and win the game throwing the ball, they're not in good shape.
He's not wrong.
No, he is wrong.
Spot on.
No, he's not.
I think he is.
Lamar Jackson can throw the ball.
No, I'm talking about the part if they continue to make him run and be the biggest rusher on the team. He's going to get hurt. You can't sustain that.
Well, you can sustain it for the year. He specifically said that he is incapable of throwing the ball. He said it.
Well, at the end, that's the one thing he said. Yeah.
And that is completely unfair. Lamar Jackson, much to my surprise, because he was known as being very dumb coming out of school, and I understand he runs the pistol and they do options and stuff, but he's capable. In fact, if you look at statistics, he by far passes out of the pocket than he does when he runs.
I agree.
And just because he's such a talented runner and he picks up so many yards per run, I mean, listen, first of all, it's the easiest analysis of all time. Like, running quarterbacks get hurt, fine. Okay? But to act like he is, you know, Tim Tebow is a complete fallacy.
I don't think anyone's comparing him to Tebow.
He just did.
He said if he has to rely on the passing game, I don't think that is a recipe for success.
Can he get the ball down the field passing exclusively if his team falls behind 21-0?
I think that, well, first of all,
if the running game doesn't work, okay. can he win a ball game for you?
Well, he's not Deshaun Watson or something, but he's capable of passing.
He is capable of passing intermediate to short routes if he has to.
He can throw downfield.
He has a cannon. Is he accurate with it? I saw him light up Miami in week one, but has he done anything like that since then?
It's unfair to say because he's had. They have so much success running the ball.
At this point in his career, he is not a great thrower.
No, he's not a great thrower.
But I think there are shortcomings with the offense that Baltimore runs right now. Potentially, he could develop into the type of quarterback that could do both, and in that case, there would be no stopping him.
Well, I don't know.
But ultimately, because you look back at history, most of all running quarterbacks do not last a long period of time.
Well, then I'll say Randall Cunningham again. I mean, there's guys that can last in the league doing that. And I don't care if he can or not. He's not. There's. What do you think? He's going to get hurt this year for the season?
I'm not saying this year.
But that's what Mangini was saying.
Mangini's point was that most running quarterbacks, if not all of them, don't last a long time in this league. They don't play 10 or 15 years.
I also don't. I don't know. And I want to see if there's any kind of precedent on this. Like, how can you have a successful team if your quarterback is your leading rusher?
It's never happened.
Well, he doesn't lead the team in carries.
No, he doesn't.
But in yards, he does.
In yards, he does.
But, Rich, that's
dangerous.
No, it's a deceiving bit of information because every time he runs, he picks up 50 yards. I mean, it's his yards per carry has got to be insane. So
he's averaging 6 or 7 yards a carry.
Right. So, I mean, it's not like he's running every time that they, you know, every possession of theirs.
His passer rating, by the way, is respectable. It's like a 95.5.
Yes, he's been a bad quarterback.
Yeah, he has been.
I mean, is he going to, you know, step up when they're down 21? I don't know. But that's a very difficult situation for any quarterback.
99 carries in 8 games. So 10 carries a night, not 10 carries a game, not a lot. Not, I thought it was going to be more than that.
No, it's just that he picks up crazy ass yards when he runs.
But I don't think what Mangini said was particularly outrageous.
No, Mangini first of all made an obvious comment, but second of all, he dismissed him as a quarterback, which I don't think is fair.
They dismissed a quarterback?
No, that he dismissed him as
Jackson
a quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, as a passer, you're right. I just don't know. I agree with him. I mean, if you keep yourself vulnerable and you continue to be the leading rusher on your team. Well, the law of averages says that he's going to get injured.
The hope would be that as he matures and as he stays in the league, that becomes less and less.
Well, they have to do that.
Fine. But this year they don't. Yes, John.
I would like to know, because I saw the same stats you did during the game that says he's a better throw. He throws the majority of his passes from the pocket. I would like to know how much the play-action game factors into that. Because they run the football so well.
I'm sure it factors
in a ton. And as a defense,
Dude, they run the pistol.
I know.
I mean, I understand that.
But because they run the football so well and you bring your linebackers up to do that, does that create more space?
Of course.
So again, the numbers might be a little skewed because the running, his running game is far better than everyone else.
But that's the offense.
He's making it work. Right. I mean, and you know what? Give Harbaugh all the credit in the world. He looked at his talent and said, how do we maximize it? What do we do? Do we run? And he figured out the pistol seems to be.
They're 6-2. Obviously, they're playing very well, and the run game is working.
Why are we arguing? Yeah, they have a great run game. He's able to pick a lot of yards in the carry.
The reason we're arguing, Fred, is because you were so outraged.
No,
about
I'm
this.
Out. Yes, because
that's why we're arguing.
Okay, so if I'm a quarterback, I've been having success, and now we're putting all these asterisks on it. They run the ball too well.
You said it yourself. They're going to have to eventually change their game.
Sure.
That was his point at the beginning.
But
and that was you can't sustain that type of offense.
I got the opinion that he was talking about this year, and I think that that's garbage. I think that they have a unique offense. He has a very unique skill set, and I don't care what he does in 5 years. I care what he's doing this year.
My way I read Mangini was saying is that he was talking about further in the future.
Yes.
That's exactly what I thought it was.
Make that a promo.
I know Mangini.
He's acting like a 5-year-old.
Yes. Well, I'm also kidding, you non-sarcastic finding bastard. Could you see my face?
Yeah.
You want to call back from years ago?
Yes.
Of course I'm kidding, John. Jesus Christ. He's yelling no. God, I'm joking.
I could
obviously
see
not very funny. No. All right,
shut up.
All right, Ted Johnson is not coming in again. So we'll be back. There will be no commercials here, just the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.